Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Immortal Life by Loretta Hignett, narrated by Julianne Irons. Chapter 1. I hauled myself onto the boards of the jetty and vomited for the fifth time. A stream of muddy lake water poured from my mouth and splashed onto the boards, soaking into the old wood and disappearing between the cracks. Ew. At least it was just water this time. I'd lost my breakfast the first time I'd puked. I could still see the misshapen chunks of toast lying in a murky puddle at the end of the jetty. Drowning over and over and over again wasn't fun. In fact, it was something I hated with a passion. If I could rank the ways I hated almost dying, number one would be getting burnt, then getting the skin flayed off my body, and then drowning. No one else was going to get this naiad out of the lake, though, so it was up to me. She couldn't stay here. She'd already scared a few fishermen witless, and had possibly eaten someone's chihuahua. I coughed and wiped my mouth with the back of my hand.
"You almost got her that time!"
Benson called over to me cheerfully from his little dinghy, floating by on the lake. He whistled and jerked on his fishing line. He'd been happily casting his line out, in between having to poke my drowning body with an oar to get me to rise up enough that I could take a breath, regain consciousness, and get myself back onto the jetty. I hoiked up another lungful of water. While I was a great swimmer, as well as an excellent wrestler, apparently I was no good at underwater wrestling. The naiad wasn't as strong as me, but she was fast, and all she had to do was hold me in a lock until I lost consciousness and sunk to the bottom of the lake, so she could swim away, laughing. So far, I'd drowned 4 times. Because of my stupid regeneration, my body pushed the water from my lungs, restarted my brain, and woke me up again. The first time, I was still at the bottom of the lake, so I inhaled another mouthful of water and drowned again. Luckily, Benson cottoned on to what was happening and got busy with his oar, and poked my drowned body out of the water enough that I could get my face airside up. We made a great team.
"Why don't you jump in and try to catch her yourself?" I muttered.
The words felt rough in my throat. I coughed one more time and hauled myself to my feet.
"Ah, I'll sink like a stone. Never learn to swim if I'm being honest with you. Besides, if I jump in, who will say the prayers to get rid of her?"
"Benson," I sighed, "you know that the prayers don't work. I already explained this to you. She's come through the portal in the town square. I just have to throw her back through." He splashed me with his oar.
"Of course the prayers work, you heathen. It's a classic exorcism. Gotta get the evil spirits back to hell where they belong."
"They're not from hell," I muttered pointlessly. Despite all the evidence, Benson refused to believe that the odd mythical creatures that kept falling through the portal were anything other than demons. To give him some credit, he took everything in his stride. He hadn't freaked out about anything so far, and I wasn't holding much back. Except myself, he still didn't know that I wasn't human. I wasn't going to tell him either. He'd call me a demon and throw holy water on me. It would change the dynamics of our relationship, and I liked our relationship the way it was. He thought all supernatural creatures were demons. I didn't want him to think I was evil. I was fond of the grumpy old bastard. I was working towards the idea that I could change his mind about supernatural creatures. "What about the Cushy? The Fey Dogs? You loved those big green bastards."
"Aye, that I did," he agreed, rubbing his chin. "But they're still demons. Nice demons, mind. Those little bellflowers stay fresh on the altar for almost 3 weeks.
He scowled.
"Still, demons. Like Satan's sprite. That little creature you carry around in your underthings."
I huffed out a breath. Pepe was still refusing to go back into the portal. Most of the time, he was snuggled in my bra or hanging out in my van, passionately licking his new girlfriend, a taser. I was worried about him, but he showed no interest in going back home just yet. He was a real cutie pie, with his big blinky eyes and bright green sparkling skin. I hadn't had a pet in thousands of years, and despite not wanting one, he seemed to have adopted me, rather than the other way around. It was easy to forget that he had the power to burn the whole town to ashes in the blink of an eye. Leroy had been researching salamanders, trying to help, and all he'd found out is that they are insanely dangerous and best avoided at all costs. Still, it didn't stop me from carrying him around in my bra and bottle-feeding him hot sauce like he was a little baby. I glared at Benson.
Why don't you try praying over Pepe? See if you can get him to go back home.
I may get a few wires crossed when it comes to this demon business, Imogen, he grumbled. But I know for a fact that if I go anywhere near that little bugger, he'll likely roast me nuts off.
I laughed in spite of myself. It hurt my throat, so I stopped quickly. Wringing out my hair, I looked out over the lake and sighed. How am I going to catch this damned naiad?
Don't know, Benson shrugged. All I know is that you damn well better. We can't have a water demon sullying our beautiful lake.
There was no point telling him that naiads weren't demons. I knelt down, catching my breath for a moment, and mentally rifled through what I knew about them. Naiads were water fairies, which made them fae. Fairy was made up of an infinite amount of dimensions, just like Earth was, some of which overlapped with our dimension. Elemental fae, like dryads and naiads, used to appear on Earth quite often, hiding in springs and fountains, watching humanity from a distance, sometimes teasing and playing tricks, other times committing outright murder for giggles. But as time went on, humans changed. Rather than run away in terror at the sight of an elemental fae, we were more likely to pick up a camera and grab the rest of our friends to come take a look. As the natural waterways were polluted and forests cut down, elemental fae retreated back into their own dimension and deliberately strengthened the walls between realms so they couldn't be pursued. Apart from a few whispers from witches who wisely avoided them and children's wild stories, none had been seen on Earth for several generations. Like all fae, naiads were selfish, capricious, and troublesome. They were mostly corporeal, but could squeeze their way into any body of water through pipes and spouts. This naiad had clearly fallen through the dip by accident. She'd fallen out of the sky, hit the lawn, and flopped on the ground like a dying fish until she got to the first source of water she could find. The tiny lion's head water fountain at the edge of the town square, and disappeared up the pipe. She might have gotten away with it, too. Except the whole thing had been witnessed by a group of burly workmen reinstalling the statue of Sir Humphrey. The workmen were understandably frightened out of their wits. Two of them got their cell phones out and made appointments with their respective therapists. One of them resolved to stop smoking so much pot, and the last one crossed himself and called Father Benson. And, of course, Father Benson called me. When I got to the town square, I examined the fountain. It was a little thing, a stone structure with a lion's head carved in the side, a tiny water spout coming out of its mouth and dribbling into a clamshell-shaped bowl, no bigger than a bird's bath. The fountain was empty. There was no water fae milling around at the bottom of the tiny bowl. A quick inspection and a phone call to Leroy later, and he'd hacked into the town plans for me. He discovered the water from the fountain came directly from the lake, feeding backwards and forwards by a tiny pipe. The naiad had obviously made her way through the water fountain pipes into the lake. The lake was a picturesque little body of water at the bottom of Emerald Valley, a popular fishing spot ringed by a walking track. The naiad started up the usual fairy tricks. She'd terrified a couple of fishermen by lying at the bottom of the lake, pretending to be a dead body. And she'd reared out of the water like an alligator a couple of times, deliberately scaring the crap out of some toddlers feeding the ducks. And again, she might have eaten Susan Figg's chihuahua. The lake was a popular spot for the locals to walk their dogs. It was only a matter of time before this damned naiad ate someone else's pet, or worse. I inhaled, filling my lungs with oxygen, relishing having air in them instead of water. I needed a break, a vacation, something. The wind brushed against me, chilling my wet skin, but also bringing the sound of a love song on the breeze. I cringed. Damn it. For a whole minute, I forgot he was there. Behind me, at the edge of the lake where the jetty began, an outrageously gorgeous young man stood, leaning slightly, a crutch in place of his missing leg, holding a Bluetooth speaker over his head. The music seemed to be never-ending. He had several playlists dedicated to me. We were on our third round of listening to Taylor Swift songs. Brandon had been following me around for weeks now, bombarding me with flowers, slipping poetry under my door, and singing love songs outside my window. I'd never been more embarrassed in my life. Apparently, I'd triggered some sort of ancient werewolf mating ritual by helping him kill his mortal enemy, his father, and taking him to be healed after his leg was ripped off. Brandon was now 100% obsessed with me, convinced that we were fated mates, destined to be together forever. I mean, the kid was gorgeous. Smoldering dark eyes and silky brown hair. Muscle-packed body built for power and speed. But he was 18 years old. He was too young for me, by several hundred thousand years. To make things worse, Brandon's best friend Sebastian was not so secretly in love with him, and now he hated me with the power of 1,000 suns. In between the love notes and chocolates on my doorstep, I was getting death threats and dead rats. It was embarrassing, annoying, and just downright inconvenient for me right now. Besides, I was getting sick of the love songs. I begged Backman to do something about it, but she said there was nothing that could be done. It would have to run its course. Even more disturbingly, she insinuated that Brandon didn't just imprint on me because of my actions. She said it was sparked by a tie in her blood, some sort of cosmic connection at play. Maybe, in one of his former lives, we were lovers. Hopefully, when he was much, much older. I didn't want to think about that. The whole thing gave me the heebie-jeebies. I'd tried everything to put him off. Burping and farting in front of him, eating with my mouth open, scratching myself. Every single thing that might give someone the ick, I tried it. Nothing would dull the light of devotion in his eyes. I even had Raphael speak to him. But the only impact it had was to annoy Raphael. Brandon's love, apparently, was unshakable. I'd even threatened to murder him several times, but he seemed to like the idea of dying at my hands. There wasn't much I could do. I just had to wait until the obsession waned. Until then, he'd follow me, watching every move I made. Unsurprisingly, he wasn't the only one watching me right now. I looked over the water to the far side of the lake, where a squat, gray-haired woman hung around the water's edge. I narrowed my eyes. She looked vaguely familiar, and so did the white fluffy dog bouncing around her feet, but all old ladies looked the same to me. It was the expression on her face that did it, though. Corrugated forehead, scrunched-up eyes, chin quivering with barely disguised rage. I pointed. I know that woman. Who is she?
Ah!
Father Benson's face collapsed in on itself into a mass of wrinkles, his grumpy bastard expression.
That's Mrs. Judy Popple. She's a bit of a busybody, that one.
The name was familiar. I nodded. That's right. I remember her, and her little dog, too. She was in Jameson's clinic the day I got gored by the unicorn, waiting for the vet to check out her spoiled little fluffball. Glancing over again, I frowned. Mrs. Popple was half hiding behind a tree, watching me, eyes narrowed to tiny slits. Is she watching us?
I dare say she is, Benson jerked on his fishing line. She's got aught better to do than stick her nose where it doesn't belong. She's a complainer, that one. Wanted the trees outside her house cut down, because they gave her dog hay fever.
Jameson insinuated that she's got Munchausen's by proxy.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. That woman needs attention like you need oxygen to breathe.
I coughed. That comparison is a little on the nose right now, Father.
You know what I mean. She loves complaining. Nothing makes her happier than making a fuss. She used to complain that the local running club ran by her house in the morning and made too much noise, so they changed their route. Then she complained that they weren't running past her house anymore, and she'd gotten used to them getting her up in the morning. None of the local kiddos go near her house.
She's been known to swipe at the teens on bikes with her broom."
His expression grew thunderous.
"In times gone by, her house would have been egged and strung with bog rolls every night. But no, kids these days are empathetic," he sneered. "They feel sorry for her."
"Damn kids," I nodded vehemently. "Damned kids and their damned heightened emotional intelligence."
"She used to call the police station 5 times a day,
Benson said, rowing nearer to me on the jetty. He reached down and grabbed one of the poles to keep the boat in place.
"She'd report everything. Suspicious noises in the alleyway behind her house. Stray cats bouncing around her backyard. Satanic rituals in the town square."
I chuckled awkwardly.
"What a nutjob, huh? Gary Harmon threatened her with a charge for wasting police time, so she complained to his CO in Cedar Hills. After a couple of days of complaining to the CO, he gave Gary the go-ahead to arrest her. Practically begged him, in fact. She even spent a day in the cells."
"Really?"
"Really. Trouble is, the cells in the police station aren't separated from the rest of the office, so they could still hear her complaining. Gary tried to get a special dispensation to use one of those Hannibal masks on her, but he couldn't get the permission. Eventually, he put on noise-canceling headphones and tried to ignore her. Of course, she tried to sue once she was released. She got a fair few months of complaining out of that little incident."
"She sounds like a peach." I looked over. Mrs. Popple was still glaring at us from behind the tree. There was no one else around. She was watching us. For some reason, she made me uncomfortable.
"The stint in the cell didn't put her off,"
Benson added, trying to stabilize his little dinghy and keep it in one place.
"She still calls the station every day. But now..."
Benson's gaze drifted off into the distance, and he frowned.
"Gary doesn't seem to be around much anymore. Haven't seen him in months, in fact."
I laughed nervously. Last time I'd seen Officer Gary Harmon, he was running off into the forest after being transformed into a pig by a terrifying fae queen. "I'm sure he's around," I said out loud. "He's probably just busy. Tell me more about Mrs. Popple. Do you think she's spying on us?"
"Oh, she's definitely spying. She's always looking for something to complain about. Looks like we caught her attention somehow."
I guess being threatened by a maimed unicorn in the vet's office would catch anyone's attention. She didn't see him in full unicorn mode, though, but we did take her appointment. For a woman like her, that would be a mortal offense. She probably had my photo on a corkboard somewhere, with a target drawn over it, and little darts sticking into my eyes. Benson fumbled with his oars.
"She's probably taken to watching us demon hunt. No doubt she'll make a complaint to my archbishop about something or other. My exorcism technique, maybe."
He glowered in her direction.
"I've told her many times the good Lord will give her plenty to do and as much attention as she needs if she wants to come and join my flock. But no," he muttered, "she's a Baptist."
He said the word Baptist in the same way that I might say serial killer. I rubbed my chin. "She seems like trouble. Do you think..." There was a huge splash. A pale figure reared out of the water next to the dinghy, drenching Benson and rocking the boat precariously. The priest let out an outraged shout and let go of his oar so he could hold on to the sides of the boat. For a second, it looked like it might capsize. Benson's face was frozen in terror. An eerie, high-pitched giggle echoed over the water. Benson's expression almost cracked my heart in two. He couldn't swim, and he was scared. Watching that frail little man trying to get his balance in the dinghy sent a jolt of pure rage through my body. I scanned the water furiously, waiting for her to come up. The naiad's head broke the surface a few yards away, and she pushed her long, seaweed-green hair out of her eyes. Her pale, scaly skin glistened prettily in the sunlight, casting little rainbows on the water. She smiled at me.
"Ready for another round, idiot mortal?"
"In case you haven't noticed, you watery tart, I'm not mortal," I hissed back.
She giggled and tossed her head, splashing the surface.
Oh, and I'm glad. It's so fun watching you drown over and over again.
It won't be fun when I've stuffed you into a tiny beaker and put you on my sunny windowsill.
Her eyes flew wide.
Oh, she mocked. I'm so scared.
You can't stay in this lake, Naiad.
I drew myself up, thrusting my chin towards her.
Go home. Follow the pipe back to the little fountain in the town square. It's not far away. From there, you should be able to leap back into the portal. I'll help you.
I don't need your help. She scrunched up her nose in disgust. I'm not going back. I like this lake. I'm staying.
The mortals here won't stand for it. It will only be a matter of time before they try to catch you and experiment on you.
Believe me, I added darkly.
You don't want to know what they're capable of.
Oh, I know what they're capable of, she murmured. I've had several mortal men in my lifetime, a millennia or so ago.
She pouted and smacked her lips.
They were delicious. Anyway, why would I go home? Our waters are crowded. This one is empty, and I have you to play with.
I'm not here to play, fairy. I'm here to get you the hell out of this lake before you scare the mortals.
I like being scary, she smiled. I like scaring mortal men. I like touching them. I want to have one before I go. If I can get one of them to dive into the lake, I'll be able to have my way with him before I eat him. I don't want to eat dogs anymore, she pouted. They're fun to catch, but not nice to eat. Too furry. I have to pick the hair out of my teeth.
She bared her teeth at me. They were pointed, like shark teeth. I shuddered.
You're not eating a mortal man. You're not eating any dogs. You're going home.
She splashed me with a handful of water.
Make me.
Don't push me, Naiad. Go home or die.
She giggled.
Hey, you can't even last 1 minute underwater. I'll tell you what. Go and get me a younger man. Not an old one like that.
She pointed a webbed finger at Benson.
Someone more tender and harder, she cooed, if you know what I mean. And maybe then I'll consider going home.
You're not laying one hand on any of the men in this town, I snarled.
She shrugged. Then I'll drown your old man here and bury him at the bottom of this lake. I bet he's easier to kill than you are.
Quick as a dolphin, she dived under the water. Benson's dinghy lurched up, and he clutched at the sides with white knuckles as it rocked from side to side. The Naiad surfaced at the end of the jetty, laughing prettily.
Oh, you bitch, I hissed.
I launched myself at her, catching her hair in my hands as I dived into the lake. She laughed, her high-pitched voice echoing easily through the water. All she had to do was keep me submerged for a couple of minutes, and I'd drown again, and she'd go free. This time, however, I was determined to hang on to her. She whirled in my hands like an alligator, trying to tangle me up and disorient me. But I wrapped my hands around her slippery hair and kept her in place. My fury kept me focused. I got her in a headlock and squeezed as hard as I could. Her clawed hands scraped at me, drawing blood. Gritting my teeth, I ignored the pain and squeezed harder, putting pressure on her gills behind her ears so that she couldn't breathe. My original plan had been to try and talk her into diving into a little jar of spring water I had prepared earlier. The spring water was sweet, much nicer than the duck poop-infested lake water, and I'd hoped I could talk her into getting into the jar so I could throw her back through the portal. I was doing her a favor, after all. Unfortunately, this Naiad was a nasty bitch. She'd sneered at me, tossed the jar into the lake, and told me to go fuck myself. And we'd been trading insults and sparring underwater ever since. So now, I had no plan apart from trying to render her unconscious so I could haul her soggy fey body out of the water, drag her to the town square, and throw her back through the portal. I squeezed tighter. She slipped her webbed feet up and over, trying to break my hold. An awful screech hit my eardrums. She was screaming. She writhed and wriggled in my arms, and I gripped her tighter.
black spots appeared in my vision. I was drowning again. All I had to do was hold on. Suddenly, she was gone. My arms were empty. What the fuck? With the last bit of oxygen in my lungs, I kicked up and broke the surface and took a huge breath in, then another and another. When the urge to lose consciousness ebbed slowly away, I looked around the lake. Benson sat in the dinghy in front of me, holding both hands in the water.
"Where did she go?" I asked him.
"I banished her."
His face was paler than usual, but determined.
"I blessed the water. She's gone."
I groaned. "Oh, Father." For once, he'd actually done something. It was a pity that what he'd done wasn't helpful. The naiad wasn't gone. His prayer caused her to dematerialize temporarily. He'd berate me to death if I tried to explain that he'd performed magic, but it was true. His prayer, with the intention behind it, and the water as a conduit, all added up to a magic spell which destabilized her atoms. All it did was shock her out of my grip. She was probably watching me from the far side of the lake, licking her wounds, waiting for another opportunity to strike. I wasn't going to be able to wrangle her by myself. I needed a plan B. Maybe I could get Raphael to pretend to be a dog walker and have him linger by the edge of the water as bait for her. He was in New York at the moment and would be home later on tonight, so I'd run it by him then. I hoped the naiad didn't eat anyone in the meantime. Weirdly, I didn't want to tell Father Benson that she wasn't gone. I glanced down at him, sitting in his dinghy. He looked frail, but fierce.
"Nice job, Father."
He pursed his lips and gave me a stern nod. Suddenly feeling every single minute of my age, I hauled myself up on the jetty again. I sighed as I checked my watch. I didn't have time to go after the naiad again. I had another appointment to keep. My eyes scanned the lake, looking for the naiad. There was no sign of her that I could see. The water was still and calm. On the other side of the lake, Mrs. Popple leaned out from behind her tree, glaring at me. Her dog danced around by her feet. She was definitely spying on us. She was doing a terrible job of it, too. Taking another huge breath, I sighed it out again. With any luck, the naiad would eat Mrs. Popple's dog and give her something else to obsess over. "Come on," I said to Benson. "I'll give you a lift back home." Chapter 2. I stumbled across the town square, flopped down on the grass next to Leroy, and groaned dramatically. He smiled down at me.
"I take it that the naiad hunting didn't go too well?"
"Not well at all. That bitch is still in the lake. I couldn't wrangle her out of it." I rolled over and propped myself up on one elbow. "At least she can't get out of the water, so we know she can't go too far away. There's only one pipe leading into the lake." I pointed to the little water fountain on the edge of the lawn. "She won't come here either. She wants to stay, so she won't go near the portal." I let out a huge sigh and stretched my arms above my head.
"I tell you what, buddy, I'm over this monster hunting caper. We can't get this pocket dimension set up quick enough."
He nodded. "Once it's up, you'll have a whole lot of free time on your hands, that's for sure. It should catch anything that falls through." He frowned. "Or anything that comes through intentionally." Marigold and Leroy had been very busy over the past couple of months. They'd finally designed a foolproof custom pocket dimension to fit over the entrance of the dip. The original idea was to set up a trap for the ancient, the mysterious, insanely powerful creature that hunted me and ripped me to shreds when I used my full star potential. We were working towards the idea that I could trap him and question him and find out why he kept trying to destroy me. That was Marigold's idea, actually. I wanted to beat the shit out of him, but I promised her that I'd behave myself. At some point, while discussing all the options, we all felt really stupid when we realized the pocket dimension would work for us in a lot of different ways. It would catch anything that fell through accidentally and hold it so it couldn't wander too far away. Most mythical creatures would probably find their way back through the portal,
The ones that didn't could be easily scooped.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?